holding on the top line of Chofei Amudbeis. Still trying to figure out this question about whether if a person is duchening, is that an, if we see a person duchening?
What does he get?
It's
only Allah,
right? Mitzvah Shemaim.
Mitzvah Shemaim.
Zohar is Mitzvah
Shemaim.
Like, how about Tevel? Tevel is also Mitzvah Shemaim. Okay, so we're still trying to figure out if a person is, if we see a person duchening, is that enough of a proof that he's a kohen? Tashma, Braita says, chazaka lekohuna, as a chazaka that a person is a kohen, you can use the following. Nesius kapayim, seeing him duchen, v'chiluk granos, receiving truma at the granaries, the edus.
So all those three.
Or any, no, any of those, any one of those, any one of those, and edus. Now, the first question we have to ask, what do you mean, edus chazaka? What is, edus is not just a chazaka. On the face of it, if Eidus is much stronger than Chazaka, Eidus on the face of it means that they knew his parents, they knew his father was a Kohen, they knew his mother was Kasher LeKohuna, and you're saying that then automatically then you know he's a Kohen. That's much stronger than a Chazaka.
Aiding has defined that he's a Kohen.
Yeah, not that's directly on him, but if they're saying that we know his father and his father is a Kohen, we know his mother and we know she's not a Grusha or Chalotza or what have you, that's powerful evidence. That's much more than Chazaka. Ela Lav Hachikama. Obviously, the Braisa must mean as follows. Nesias Kapayim Ki Eidus. That we consider Duchening to be on the same level as Eidus. Ma Eidus Liyuchsin. Just like Eidus allows us to consider a Makoyin Liyuchus because there's nothing stronger than Eidus. Af Nesias Kapayim Liyuchsin. So also Nesias Kapayim would mean that we can assume from that that he's a Koyin Liyuchus. So again, we're trying to figure out all this time this question. If we see a person duchening, is that enough evidence for us to consider him a kohen miyuchas based on this price? And it seems that yes,
because it equates edus,
which edus is more than a chazaka. Edus tells us that he actually is miyuchas, and it's equating the sias kapayim with that. The answer is loy, not necessarily. You could say edus habam mikoyach chazaka kachazaka. No, maybe it does mean an edus. In the sense, an Eidus that only accomplishes a Chazaka. What does it mean? Where the Eidus itself is based on a Chazaka. What do we mean? Before we were talking about the idea, what do we mean, Eidus? We thought a minute ago, we said it means that the Eidim are coming and saying, we know this person's father and we know his mother. Now we're going to talk about a different kind of Eidus, where the Eidus itself is only gives us a Chazaka. Because it's not directly on him, it's sort of an indirect thing that tells us he's a Kohen. So that, you could say, then fine, that kind of Eidus allows us to consider him a Chazaka of a Kohen. Fine, maybe Nesias Kapayim is the same thing. What do we mean by that? For example, we have the case of somebody who came to Rabami, Amalei, and he says about somebody else, Muchzachni Bezeshu Kohen, I have a Chazaka on so-and-so that he's a Kohen. Amalei Mara Yisus, Rabami asked him, what did you see that makes you assume that? He says, Amalei Shekara Rishin Bebeis HaKnesses. He says, I saw him get the first aliyah in shul. Well, Rabami asks him, that's not enough to tell us. B'cheskas shu koyin or b'cheskas shu gadol? Is it, you saw him getting the aliyah as a koyin or as the greatest person there in shul? Because technically, the din is like this. We know it's supposed to be koyin, then Levi, then Yisrael, as far as aliyahs. Really, though, there are exceptions to that. We learned in Megillah, for example, that Rav used to get the aliyah of Koyin, even though Rav was not a Koyin, he was descended from David HaMelech, because he was the greatest person there in Shul.
In
Torah. The Gemara mentions in Gittin also that sometimes, in particular, if a Koyin, nowadays we don't do this. Nowadays, because it can lead to Ava, it can lead to arguments, I'm greater than you, no, I'm greater than you, whatever, but in those days, in particular, if you had the Koyin in Shul as an Amoret, you're not going to say it wouldn't be Bekavadik, that he should get the first Aliyah, and then later on, the Tamar Chachamim in Shul are going to be getting Aliyah, so therefore they would give them first. So here, Abami is asking the guy very nice. You saw the guy getting the first Aliyah. But was he? Did they call him up Yamod Plenty and Plenty Koyin? Or was it they were calling him up as Yisrael Bimkam Koyin because he's being called up as the greatest person there? So the guy answers, Shekara Achra of Levi. Yes, but in this case, I saw that the next person who got an Aliyah after him was a Levi.
Not answering the question.
It does answer the question because like this. If he was getting the aliyah because he's a Kohen, then yes, the next person who gets the aliyah is the Levi. Listen up. Let me explain what Rashi says on this, based on the Gemara and Gittin discusses this whole issue. The Mishnah and Gemara that mentions over there a number of takanas the Chachamim made b'pnei Dakei Shalom. One of them is that you go in the order Kohen, Levi, and then Israel. Now, the Gemara explains over there that if there's no Kohen, or there's no, if there's no Kohen, it says there, Nisparda HaChavila, like the bundle has come undone. Meaning, you don't have to follow the same order of Kohen, then Levi, then Israel. In particular, so if you're calling up somebody instead of the Kohen, then a Levi does not get the second Aliyah. Rashi says over here that it means Rashi mentions over here, it means that we don't have to have the second Aliyah go to a Levi. If a Yisrael wants to go before the Levi, then he can. Here what it is, Rashi says, the case over here would be that there were actually two Kohenim in Shul. So if this guy was not a Kohen and yet he got the first Aliyah, then the second one would have to be the Kohen, at least. You don't have in place of the Levi. You didn't have that. So therefore, obviously, the first guy was a Kohen. Tosis explains differently that what we're talking about over here, again, given the idea that you're supposed to have, the Aliyahs are supposed to be, besides the Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, you're also supposed to be roughly in order of how great they are. You can't be calling them Amoretz before Tamar Chacham. Then what are we talking about over here? The Levi who got the Aliyah over here was lesser in Torah, was a lesser person in Torah, than the Yisrael who got the third Aliyah. Now, why would that be? The only way that could happen is if indeed the first Aliyah was a Kohen. If the first Aliyah had been a Yisrael and we gave it to him because he's a Gadol, then we wouldn't have given the second one to a Levi who's lesser than the third person.
But he still hasn't answered the question. The question was,
listen, that's good enough. The hello, Rav Ami Lakor Na'al Piv. So Rav Ami said, based on that, we can assume that the person is a Kohen. This is what we mean. Eidus Habam Mikoyen Chazaka. Meaning, the man's not saying directly, I know for a fact this man is a Kohen. He's saying indirectly, because we see that the second person who got an Aliyah is a Levi, and because we know the dinim, that a Levi will only get the second Aliyah if a Kohen was first, that means the first guy has to have been a Kohen. And we're saying that's good enough ages, and the man now has a chazaka of being a Kohen. So that's what we mean, man. Obviously, if the aid were to come and say, L'chatchila, I know this person's father, and I know he's a Kohen, and I know his mother, then of course, you know, nothing needless to say. Then he's a Kohen Miyochas. But here we're talking about that the Eidos, Sachako was that the next person after him was a Levi.
And when they call people up, they don't say a Kohen or a Levi.
Apparently they didn't, yeah. I mean, in Spanish shuls, even nowadays, they don't call up people by name.
Yeah. They don't?
No, they tell the person ahead of time that he's going to be getting Aliyah, and when it comes to the Aliyah, yeah, Yamod Shlishi, Yamod Revi'i, whatever, yeah. They don't say the person's name, yeah.
Here they call that
client. In Ashkenazi, that's all they do, yeah.
No.
That I've seen in Ashkenazi shuls as well, where they give you a card ahead of time so that you know that you're getting an Aliyah, but they still call you by name when the time comes. Yeah. Okay.
What are the comments for doing that?
Another case, similarly, Hahuda also kamed Rabbi Shurban Levi, a similar case, somebody came to Rabbi Shurban Levi, Omalei Mukzakni Bezeshu Levi. He says, I have a chazaka on so and so that he's a Levi. Omalei Mare Isa, so Rabbi Shurban Levi asked him, what did you see exactly? Omalei Shikara Shani Bezeshu Levi. Same idea, he says, because he got the second Aliyah. Again, the question became, Okay, again, the question is, b'cheskes shu Levi, b'cheskes shu Gadol. Again, why did he get the second Aliyah? Was it because he's a Levi, or is it because he's the next greatest person in shul? And the answer was, shekara l'fon of Kohen, because in this case, it was the opposite. A Kohen got the Aliyah in front of him. Now, what is it? So Rashi says, again, based on that Gemara and Gittin, that what happens if you have a Kohen in Shul and no Levi, or for whatever reason a Levi is not being called? So Rashi says what you do in that case is actually you have a Kohen gets the second Aliyah. According to Rashi, then you call up Kohen A for the first Aliyah, Kohen B for the second Aliyah, and then a Yisrael, so there's no Levi. Now that we don't do the halacha like that, and in fact Tosfos has a very short Tosfos here. Shekara l'fon of Kohen pirish pam achas, that there was one Kohen in front of him. The halacha as we follow is if there's no, and we know this, we see it happen every so often in shul when there's no Levi, bim koim Levi, the same Kohen who got the first Aliyah gets the second Aliyah.
When they come from Kohani,
well, every Kohen is also a Levi, right? Every Kohen is also from Shevet Levi. So the idea is Rashi is saying instead of having the same person make the brachas twice, call up a second person. The reason we don't do that is because it's called Mishum Pugomer Yishol Rishon. You don't want to have people are going to think, oh, you know why we're giving a second Kohen the Aliyah? Must be it turned out that the first Kohen is possible. We don't want to do that.
How can we think that if we call them the first?
In between the Aliyahs. Meanwhile, you know, there were the Gaboyim were talking around the Bima over there, and all of a sudden they figured out that, you know, whatever. Yeah. But also you might have somebody who walks in late and he sees the second person getting an Aliyah. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, the point is, again, so since you saw one Kohen getting the Aliyah before him and he's getting the second Aliyah, obviously he must be a Levi. And sure enough, the hello, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the Levi Alpiv. Sure enough, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, good, then we can assume on that basis that the guy is a Levi. A third case, a person came to Rish Lakish. He says about somebody, I have a chazaka that he's a kohen. Amalei Mara Yisa, okay, what do you see? Amalei Shekori Rishon Bevesek Netzes, he says, I saw him get the first Aliyah, Mara Yisa, Amalei Shekori Rishon Bevesek Netzes. I saw that he got the first Aliyah in Shul. Amalei, but Rish Lakish tells him, wait, is that really enough? Re'isiv Shechilik Alagronis, did you see also that he got an Aliyah, that he got Truma in the granaries? From the granary Truma, which would show more definitively that he's a Kohen. Amalei Rabbi Elazar, so Rabbi Elazar says to Rish Lakish, what kind of a question is that? So what does that mean? In a place where there's no granaries, and according to you, in a place where there's no granaries, then that person can't have, that you can't give a person a chazaka of being a Kohen. The fact that he got an Aliyah, Kohen, should be enough for you. And apparently Rish Lakish ignored that because he figured, okay, you know, Akasha, okay, yeah, you know, there's always some other way, you know. But Zimnin Habu Yafs Tamid Rabbi Yechanan, and another time, these two, Rish Lakish and Rabbi Elazar, were sitting at Tamidim in front of Rabbi Yechanan. Also, ki ha ma'is lekamei, and a similar case came. Somebody came with eders that somebody is a kohen. And Rish Lakish asked the same question as you did in the previous case. Is that really enough? What makes you think it's enough that you saw him get the kohen aliyah? Have you seen that he actually got truma? And Amalei Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan says to him, who's the Rosh Hashiva, v'im ein sham goyin batla kohuna. So what are you implying? If there's no goyin over there, then the kohuna is batal. So now Rish Lakish realized that this objection that Rabbi Elazar raised before, it wasn't Rabbi Elazar's own idea. He got it from Rabbi Yochanan. What?
He couldn't have told it himself, or we get everything from the
Rabbi. No, Bipashto says we learned in Yuvamas about the story when Rabbi Elazar was telling over a teaching he learned from Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan was upset that he didn't say it over in his name until Rabbi Yeshua Bar Idi, I think it was, came and explained and pointed out to Rabbi Yochanan that basically everything that Rabbi Elazar knows is from you. In this case, so Rish Lakish originally thought it was Rabbi Elazar's own idea. Now he sees, he gets it from Rabbi Yochanan. Hodur Chazir Rabbi Elazar Bishus. So he turned around and looked angrily at Rabbi Elazar. Omer, he says, Shamat Mili de Bar Napcha. So you heard something from Bar Napcha, which means Rabbi Yochanan, V'lei Amat Lan Mishmei, and you didn't tell me it in his name. If you told me it in his name, I would have considered it a more serious objection. I would have told this guy, okay, you know what, you're saying the guy got the Kayin Aliyah, that's Taka good enough for us. So why didn't Rabbi Elazar, for the same reason that we said in Yevamos, because Rabbi Elazar figured when he told it to Rish Lakish, he figured Rish Lakish will understand pretty much everything I know comes from Rabbi Yechanan, so he'll realize himself that it comes from Rabbi Yechanan. But obviously he didn't, so therefore, yeah.
Why he didn't? I mean, what was so difficult that Rabbi Elazar knew it from Rabbi Yochanan?
Well, he didn't realize it at the beginning. He thought it was Rabbi Elazar's own idea. Okay, you know, if it's own idea, Akasha, you know, but it's not a serious objection. But when Rabbi Yochanan, when the Rosh Hashiva says that, that's different. You know that is, you know it's a serious objection, yeah. So the Gemara has kind of left this business about whether when a person is duchening or getting the aliyah for that matter, you know, to what extent we can say that's evidence that he's a kohen, and actually therefore that Rambam said that Rambam writes that if a person that if you can't allow a person to get the aliyah of kohen or to duchen unless there are edim on him that he's a kohen. In practice, though, we see, I mean, and, you know, it happens all the time that a stranger comes to shul and you ask him, are you a Kohen? And he says yes, and you give him the first Aliyah. The reason is because what's the whole issue we're talking about over here? We're worried about whether we're going to be Mala, Menesias Kapayim, or from whatever, Luyuchsin. Now, the thing is, first of all, nowadays we have no Kohen in Miyuchasim anyway. And second of all, any place outside of Eretz Yisrael, we don't have Truma either. And even in Eretz Yisrael, we don't give Truma to the Kohenim because everybody's Tamei Mes. So practically speaking, if you end up calling a person a Kohen when he's really not, it's not so terrible. There's not such major consequences that are going to come out of it, and therefore we can be more makel and yet comes to shul and says he's a Kohen, you can assume he's a Kohen.
He won't on a Ksuva HaKohen because we see him going for the first Aliyah.
That maybe not, but again, if we do, if he claims that he's a Kohen, we might not have an objection to writing on a Ksuva HaKohen. And by the way, the Rambam points out an interesting detail in that, by the way, if somebody comes, even in all these cases that we're talking about over here, when someone claims that he's a Kohen, or somebody has somebody claim on his behalf that he's a Kohen and whatever, and we're saying we don't necessarily, no, actually, let's stick to the case where he himself says, I'm a Kohen, we don't believe him, as we said in the Mishnah, he needs some kind of evidence, but fine, you're calling yourself a Kohen, okay, you're not allowed to marry a Grusha or a Chalutza, you're not allowed to become Tamei Mes, you want to call yourself a Kohen, okay, Shavi Nafsha Chatzicha Isura, you put an Isur on yourself, but for us to consider you positively a Kohen, now we need evidence. So based on all this, it seems that if it depends on the question whether we say that based on duchening we'll be malahim lekohuna. If we say that duchening is enough evidence that we have the machlokas, which we kind of left unresolved over here. If we say that the halacha and the halacha that Rambam paskens it is ein malin, so therefore fine, let him duchen.
So we drain all the negatives and not any positives.
No, but according to that, if the pashtus, we might be able to let him duchen because okay, you're not going to say based on that he's a kohen that he's a kohen miyuchas anyway.
So we mentioned
at the beginning of the sugya, Rashi had said that the problem is that maybe what if he's not a Kohen, what if he's a mamzer? Tosfos pointed out that you don't really have that issue. When a person comes to town, there's no reason to assume he's a mamzer. You usually assume that he's a kosher. Rather, the issue is, if he's not a Kohen, and he marries a woman whose yichus has been checked several generations back, which therefore we know that she'd be able to marry a Kohen and the children are automatically miyuchas as Kohenim. If this guy marries her, this guy who we don't know whether he's miyuchas, that whole thing is lost. No, he might be a cholov, and therefore the whole advantage of her yichus having been checked for generations back is lost. But not that he wouldn't be able to, and not that he wouldn't be allowed to marry her. A cholov is allowed to marry any Jewish woman he wants, but just as a practical matter, yeah. All right, Umar says. Rebbe and Reb Chiya, we find cases involving Rebbe and Reb Chiya. Chad hela ben al pi over v'lekohuna. One of them, a father said edus on his son that he's a kohen, and he allowed him to be considered a kohen on that basis. V'chad hela och al pi achiv l'levia. And the other one of them, we don't know yet which one is which. That's what we're gonna have to figure out now. The other one, a similar thing. A brother gave edus on his brother that he's a Levi, and he assumed that he's a Levi. Which one did which? Tistayim, we can conclude the Rebbe Hela ben Alpi Ovar Lekohuna. That it's Rebbe who's the one who had the father and the son and allowed the son to be cut to be a Kohen on that basis. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Haresh Bava Oma Bnizev a Kohen. If a person comes to town and says, this is my son and he's a Kohen, Neman Lachil B'Truma, we believe him insofar as he's allowed to give him Truma to eat, or we can give him Truma now. We don't believe him as far as getting married. The two possibilities that we said before, that according to Rashi, we might have to be concerned that he's a mamzer, and according to Tosfos, that he can marry whoever he wants, but the yichus won't pass down to his children. That's the thing. According to Tosfos, we're not sure if he's a kohen. The fact that his father said that he's a kohen is enough for us to give him truma, but not enough for us to consider him a miyuchas. Divrei Rebbe, that's what Rebbe says. Rebbe says, why? Isn't it contradictory? If you believe him enough that we can give him truma to eat, then you should believe him as far as the woman
magic show
also. Okay. Yeah. Say what?
You know, in the back.
Yeah.
Right next door. Don't go to the women's dancing lesson next door.
And if conversely you're not going to believe him as far as yuchsin, then don't believe him as far as eating truma either. So whether be consistent. Omolo, so Rebbe says. What? We're talking truma derabanan. Omolo, so Rebbe tells him the difference is ani ma'aminu la'achil b'truma. You know why I believe him as far as eating truma? Shebi yodei la'achil b'truma, because the father is unilaterally able to give him to eat truma. Meaning exactly that. If the father wants to give the son truma, it only takes one person to do it. But when it comes to getting married, it takes you need two parties involved. You need somebody else. You need another party. You need the girl or her father to agree to it. So therefore, we don't have enough evidence for us to be able to convince another family that he's a kohen miyuchas and you should marry him.
So we go by the level of evidence that's needed, basically.
Basically, yeah. So the vote is like this. The vote is like this. The father we know is a kohen. The father we know is a kohen. The suffix is on the son. So the father, everybody already gives him truma because he's a kohen. Therefore, so fine. He's able to give that truma to his son. There's nobody able to stop him. But when it comes to Isha, where somebody else has to be involved, then not.
How do we know if we know the father's a kohen, why we wouldn't say?
Because what if he married a grusha? What if he married a chalala?
Giving him his own truma, he's letting the boy kill.
No, well, once he gives him his own truma, so Tosfos points out over here that he's able to give him while he's alive, and therefore even after he passes away, when it's not miyada anymore, we can still continue with that chazaka from before. Tosfos points out, by the way, that earlier on the Amud, the reason why we might have an issue over here with believing the father is basically because if we believe that he's his father, and we know in halacha we do have a person has the right, so a person is able to identify his son, and that has standing in halacha, but then they're relatives, and a relative usually is possible to give edus on a relative. On the other hand, there is the fact the father has a chazaka of being a kohen, and therefore that chazaka can sort of transfer to the son. That's basically the argument.
That overtakes the fact that basically you don't allow someone to testify his relatives.
So that's what we're saying. We have two different considerations over here. We have the fact that Yakir, so the Xeris Akosiv, that a father can identify his son, and therefore so there's that. So yeah. Tosfos points out the whole issue of migri over here, but the migri actually is the problem. The migri we can't do because if he's saying he's my son, then automatically he's saying I'm possible to give edus on him. Here the father himself is an aid, but yeah. No, but the problem, that's the thing. Tosfos says he doesn't have that migri because as soon as he says I'm his father, he's my son, then automatically he's possibly himself as an aide.
That's right. Yeah. So evidently.
Okay, but again, Rebbe is saying it's not really so much a matter of edus, it's a matter of since he has the capability unilaterally to give him truma, then therefore if he's saying that he's a kohen, then we're willing to accept
that.
That's
about truma. But we're talking about.
But as far as yuchsin, then not.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. Yeah. Okay. So what does that mean? Tosfos, good. So that proves that Rebbe was the one who did with the case of the kohenim. Umid Rebbe hail a ben api over the corner. So therefore, what does that mean? The implication: if Rebbe is the one who did the case with the kohenim, Rebbe Chia hail a ach api ach of the levia. Then obviously Rebbe Chia must have been the one who one brother said an edus on another day the levi, and Rebbe accepted it. So the question is: Rebbe Chia maishna ben deloy. So what's the difference? Why Rebbe Chia doesn't accept edus about a son because of who it's alive? Because the relative achnami because of who it's alive. You have the same problem with brothers. The answer is b'mesiach l'pitrumai, because the case of the Levim was where the one brother was mesiach l'pitrumai. He didn't come to Beis Din intending to give edus. He was, we learned about mesiach l'pitrumai at the end of Yevamos, in the case of edus that a person has died to be matir his wife. Mesiach l'pitrumai is basically where a person is just like telling over a story, an interesting story or something, and from it we deduce an important fact. So here, the brother didn't actually come to Beis Din and say, I want to testify that my brother is a Levi. Yes, Rebbe Chia would say, I'm sorry, you're his brother. You can't testify on behalf of a relative. But here he was saying a story, which incidentally we learn from it, that his brother is a Levi, and therefore we can accept that. Which Tosfos points out, if it's Messiah Chavitomai, then not necessarily do we have the same conclusion as before. You could, if it's Messiah Chavitomai, Reb Chiya would accept it in the case of a father and son as well. So we're back to that the case with the father and son, you know, the Kohenim might have been with Reb Chiya, and this story of the Levim might have been with Rebbe. Okay, Tosfos says that. Given that we have a Braisa, talking about Kohenim, Haresh Baba Amav Nizav a Kohen who, and Rebbe is saying in that writer that I agree to that, then it's logical to assume that that's the actual case that came to him. Anyway, what's Messiah Chavitum, right? Ki Hodu Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. For example, we have the story that Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, Maisa Ba'adam Echad Shei Messiah Chavitum, right? There was a certain person who was once Messiah Chavitum, right? He's telling over a story that happened with him. Va'amar, Zuchurani Chani Tinoik. I remember when I was a little boy, Umukav Aksefer Shel Abba, I was still little enough to be riding on my father's shoulders. One day they took me out of school, and they took off my shirt, my clothes, and they toiled me in the mikveh so that I'd be able to eat truma that evening. You always need head of shemesh, yeah. And the point is, Rashi points out, why do they need to toivel him? Why don't they just assume to begin with that he's tohor? Because kids tend to play around in the dirt and in the mud and whatever, and they're shrotim. There are lizards and snails and other things that can make a person with the shemona shrotim that can make a person tomei when they're dead. So there's a real concern that he might have become tomei at some point. But they have to toivel him. Rav Chiya continues that there was more to the story the guy was saying. The man was saying, again, he's much older when he's saying this, but he's remembering what happened when he was little. My friends stayed away from me. They didn't want to touch me because they didn't want to make me tummy. And they called me Yochanan the Chala eater. Because now, evidently, he's a Kohen. They're going to get him ready to eat Trumos, so now he's able to eat Chala also. The hello, Rabbi Lakon Alpiv, and sure enough, Rabbi said that we can declare him a Kohen on that basis. So that's Messiah Chavitumah. He didn't come to Beis Din intending to tell that he's a Kohen. Then Mitaka wouldn't believe his own Eidus on himself. But he's one day sitting around in shul between Mincha Ma'ariv, talking with his friends, and he mentions this story. Oh, well then, okay, yeah. Tosfos point.
What does it mean,
Messiah Chavitumah? Literally means that he's speaking Lefitumah like innocently. Like not meaning to give any particular aegis about himself. Tosfos points out an important detail, the fact that he had to mention that they took him out of school. What's the importance of that? Because you could ask, very nice, they tovled him and then everything. What if he's an Eben? Avadim don't go to school. You're not allowed to teach Torah to Avadim. If they took him out Mibes HaSefer, that demonstrates he wasn't an Eben. An Eben has to be a... Tanya, Reb Shimon ben Elazar, Kishem Shetruma Chazaka LeKohuna. Just as we were discussing all this time, that when a person eats truma, then on that basis you have a chazaka that he's a kohen. Kach Ma'aserishin Chazaka LeKohuna. So also, if a person is eating or being given Ma'aserishin, then it's a chazaka that he's a kohen. V'acholik, but based in ain't a chazaka. But if somebody is given a portion in based in, then that's not a chazaka. Now that last part sounds very strange. I mean, based in, on the contrary, you think it's stronger. We'll see soon in the Gemara. We'll see soon what that means. So what does this mean? My tradition, first of all, what do you mean my tradition is a proof that he's a Kohen? My tradition to Levi. Truma goes to the Kohen, my tradition goes to the Levi. What kind of proof is that he's a Kohen? The answer is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Yes, but this Braisa is going according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the Tanya, we learned this in Yubamas. Truma la Kohen, my tradition la Levi. Truma goes to the Kohen, my tradition goes to the Levi, Divrei Rav Akiva. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, my tradition ach la Kohen. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says it also goes to the Kohen. So therefore, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you see a person getting my tradition, there's a good chance that he's a Kohen. Okay, he says you can give it also to a Kohen. You don't only have to give it to a Levi, you could also give it to a Kohen. The Kohen below the Levi, mi Omer. Where did he ever say anything about that you have to give it to a Kohen, not a Levi? And the answer is, yes, Boster to Kansinu Ezra. Because we're talking about after Ezra canceled them. We learned in Yevamos that what happened when Ezra came up, so 20-odd years before Ezra came to Israel, the Jews had come back. These are the 40,000 Jews, including that family of Bnei Barzilai that we talked about the other day. Came back to build the second Beis Mikdash. They started building it. The Kusim and the other Goyim over there harassed them and mastered on them to Kodesh and then to Achashverosh and got the building stopped for many years. This is in Megillah when Achashverosh says, Achati HaMalchus, we learned in Megillah that the famous thing that he says to Esther, I'll be willing to give you anything except the rebuilding of the Beis Mikdash. couple of years later, Achashverosh is dropped dead. Dovyavosh takes over as the king. He allows them to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, and they finally get it finished. A few years later, Ezra comes to Eretz Yisrael. We learned in Megillah the reason why he didn't come earlier is because his Rebbe Baruch Ben Neriah was still alive, and Baruch himself was too old and weak to make the trip, and Ezra wasn't going to leave his Rebbe as long as he's alive. He wanted to learn from him as much as possible. Anyway, so Ezra shows up in Yerushalayim about 20 years after the first wave of Jews started coming, and he brought with him more Jews to settle out Israel and to help establish the community. No, he was living in Babel. So actually, there's a famous Tosfos in Pesachim about the story with Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira and Goy was pretending to be a Yid meeting from the Korban Pesach. Yeah, that story was hundreds of years later. But Tosfos points out over there that if you don't own land in Eretz Yisrael, then you're part of Aliyah L'Regel. But Pashtus Ezra didn't own any land in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah.
So he went back to
his... So okay, he's going back. The Pasuk says that he looked around among the people. He couldn't find any Levim in his group. There were Kohenim, there were Yisraelim, but no Levim. And he had to send messengers to one of the cities in Babel to get them to send some Levim.
Not
in the whole. He wasn't in Yerushalayim yet. He's on his group. It's his group of 800 or so people who are on their way to Israel. There's no Levim. Actually, what we learned there in the Gemara, there were Levim with him, but only the Levim who many years earlier had chopped off their thumbs in order not to have to play music for the goyim. The Al Maris Bavel Shom Yeshavnu Gam Bachinu. They're crying over there after the Churban. The goyim are telling them Shiru Lonu Meshir Tzir and sing to us some of the songs for the Beis Hamikdash. They say Eich Nasir Yeshir Hashem Alad Masnecha. How you talking? We should sing songs on foreign soil, and they bit off whatever their thumbs, because you use them to play the harps, and that way they couldn't play the harps anymore. Those Levim survived all those years, and they were among Ezra's group, very nice, but they can't play, but they're not possible, the Levi's not possible from Mumim, but they can't play the instruments in the Mishmithash. You need people who are going to be able to play the instruments, so you had to send back to Babel to get some.
Not something from Mumim?
No. No, they're not. Levim are not possible for a moment.
He needed to bring to Eretz Yisrael.
He wanted to bring, yeah.
But maybe
there were Levim there already, but he wanted more, whatever. But the point is, no Levim were willing to come along with him until he forced the issue. So because of that, he canceled them. He made a knaf that from now on, so now we have a machlokes, what exactly the knaf is. Is it that until now you couldn't give my tradition to either the Kohen or the Levi, and now, according to the Balazar and Azari, you can only give it to the Kohen? Or is it, according to Rabbi Akiva, before you only gave it to the Levi? Now you can give it to either the Kohen or the Levi.
The Knas for not wanting to come.
Yes. And by the way, the Rambam holds that this Knas was only a temporary thing, that it lasted in that generation and maybe a couple of generations after that, but then eventually it they were mevatel it. Of course, you know, not everybody agrees with that. From our Gemara, it sounds, many Mefarshim explain that based on our Gemara and the one in Yevamos, that it sounds like it was a permanent thing, because after all, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah are living hundreds of years after Ezra, and they're still arguing about the Takana.
The purpose of the Knas was to
fine them, to punish them for the fact, why didn't you want to come? Why didn't you want to come? There it's Israel. So we learned actually in Yevamos the whole situation is a little more complicated than that. But there's two reasons the Gemara gives over there. One is that it's a knaf. The other thing is it has to do with poor Levim versus rich Levim. That you want to make sure that there's something available for the Kohenim to eat during the time when they're tummy. Anyway, so what we're saying here is there came a point, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, when you only give Ma'aser Rishon to Kohenim. So therefore, yes, if a person is getting Ma'aser Rishon, it shows that he's a Kohen. Still, the question is, v'duma ikru v'yavale, what happens if it so happens they gave the Levi? Let's say, for example, I mean, first of all, this knas was not always 100%, there were always exceptions. And second of all, if there's no Kohenim around, then you're going to give it to the Levi, you've got to give it to somebody. Amar Rav Chista, hochab ma'askin, and Rav Chista says, you're right. We're not necessarily talking about that. We're saying that the Ma'aser Rishon is always given to Kohenim. Let's say even it is given equally to Kohenim or Levim. So what are we talking about over here, that a person getting Ma'aser Rishon is proof that he's a Kohen? The case is as follows. You have a chazaka about this person that we have a suffix on. We have a chazaka that his father is a Kohen. So far, if everything was good, it would mean he's a Kohen as well. But then their coil came out, there were rumors being spread, the Ben Grusho Ben Chalotza, that he's a cholo. But then, what happened? Now, if he was a cholo, not only he wouldn't be considered a Kohen, obviously, he wouldn't be considered a Levi either. A cholo is not considered a Levi either. A cholo is considered a Yisrael. Once he loses his status as a Kohen, he also loses his status as a Levi, even though he is descended from Shevet Levi. But v'chokele the didei ma'aser beis agronis. But we see that they gave him ma'aser in the granaries. So what happened? Levi, is it that they gave it to him as Levi? Can't. Delav Levi, who he's not a Levi, there would be no reason for him to get. Ma'aser meimer. So what would you say? Ben grusha ben chalotzahu. The only other possibility, so in other words, there's only two possibilities. Either the guy is a kosher kohen, or he's a cholo. There's no in-between. There's no possibility that he's a levi. So if he's a ben grusha or ben chalutza, then it's as follows. Now we had a machalotus in Yuvamis, whether my tradition is osir to zorim. We said it's given to the levi, according to the blood of an azayu to the kohen. Are Yisraelim allowed to eat it? We learned an opinion over there that no, the same way a truma only kohenim can eat, the same way my tradition only levim can eat. So according to that opinion, then for sure then if he's a cholo, they wouldn't be giving him my tradition because he's a zor. Even according to the opinion, and this is the halacha, that my tradition is allowed to be eaten by zorim. You have to give it to the lady, but then once he takes out his truma ma'aser, it's chulin and anybody can eat it. Nevertheless, fine, it means that a zar, this ben grusha or ben chalutza, would be able to eat it. They still wouldn't distribute it to him in the granary. If they're distributing it to him, it means that he has original rights over it. Why would he have original rights? Not if he's a ben grusha or ben chalutza, because he'd be considered a Yisrael. A Levi, there's no possibility, because his father was a Kohen. The only other possibility is a Kohen. That's what we're talking about. So the case is we had reason to suspect that maybe he's not a Kohen. The fact that he's being given my submission in the Beis HaGranos demonstrates that if it was a normal case, if there was no iru on it in the first place, where just a guy came to town and we see him getting my submission in the granary, he's fine. That wouldn't tell us he's a Kohen or a Levi. Here, where we know his father was a Kohen, and the only suffix is who his mother was, the fact that he's being given my submission in the Beis HaGranos shows that he's a Kohen. And that's what we're talking about.
Excluding everything else.
Yeah, because there couldn't be any other possibility. He can't be a Levi, because by definition he's not going to be a Levi, and he can't. And if he was a Yisrael, they might allow him to eat it. They wouldn't distribute it to him afterwards. If a Levi wanted to give him something to eat, yeah, he'd be able to eat it. Okay, then the Brai said finished off. We said that if he gets the distribution in Beis Din, then it's not a chazaka. So what do you mean, Iba Beis Din? I have a chazaka. Hey, have a chazaka. Isn't Beis Din the strongest thing? If in Beis Din it's no good, where would you consider it a chazaka? Rav Sheshet is hachakamer. Right. What the Brai means is like this: Hacholik truma benichse aviv im echav beBeis Din ain a chazaka. If you have the father was a kohen, the father passed away, and now the estate is being divided up in Beis Din. If this person who we have a suffix about is getting a portion of the truma together with his brothers in Beis Din, ain't a chazaka, then that's not a chazaka that he's a kohen, because, okay, he's entitled to inherit some of it, but not necessarily to eat it. If he's a cholo, he can inherit a share of the truma, but he won't be able to eat it. He'll have to sell it or give it away to a kohen.
He can still possess it.
Yeah. So the question is, Pshita, well, in that case, isn't that obvious? Of course, he's still Yarshan's his father. And the answer is Maud Tema. You might have thought, if it weren't for the Braise saying that, Mida Hanach La'achila, Hanach Nami La'achila, you might have figured like this. The other brothers who we know are Kohenim are getting their portion and they're going to be able to eat it. You would assume if he's getting a portion also, if Beis Din is giving him his portion, presumably they're giving it to him to eat. And that would mean that he's a Kohen. Kamash Malon, that's the Chiddush. Hanach La'achila, Haila Zabuni. That no, we say because of the suffix on him, we have to assume that Beis Din is giving the other brothers their portion of Truma so they can eat it. And they're giving him his, that he can sell it to a kohen.
But wouldn't the brothers be starting to scream and blame murder if he wasn't the real brother?
No, no, no. He's definitely a real brother. The problem
if
is...
If he's the real brother, then he's a kohen.
No, no, no. Because no. What if the father had two wives? The father had two wives. He had one wife who was a regular, or whatever, an almana, and the other one was a grusha or a chalutza or a chalala or what have you. So the child from that second marriage would be a cholo.
What's the role of the Beis Din here? They can use to distribute.
Yeah, they come. They have their estate. It has to be divided, so they go to Beis Din to make sure the division is done fairly.
So if you're born from the same father, mother.
Yeah, if the second mother. No. If the second mother, if the second wife is a grusha,
oh,
then you're a cholo.
They don't carry down the claim.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be able to get married to the father.
A grusha, we learned in Yevamos that kedushin are typhus between a kohen and a grusha, because it's an issue lav, but according to everybody else except Rabbi Akiva, kedushin are typhus by it. But besides that, even if kedushin are typhus, you know, it's still biologically possible for them to have children together, right? No, but in this case, it's more than far-fetched. Here, what we're talking about is the whole Braisa was talking about that there is an error, there is a rumor going around. We don't have any definitive proof, but there is a rumor going around that this guy's mother was a grusha or a chalutza or what have you. Therefore, the fact that we see him getting a portion of Terumah and Beis Din is not enough to say that he's a kosher kohen. He still might be a chalal, and he's getting it in order to sell it. So then the Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda ein malon l'kohen al pei adeh. We had as follows in the Mishnah. We had Rabbi Yehuda saying that one aid is not enough to make a person be declared a kohen. Rabbi Elazar had said only if there's oirin, only if there's objections, people who are saying, like we just said now, that people who are objecting, he's not really a kohen, he's a cholol. But if there's no oirin, then one aid is good enough. And then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said in the name of Rabbi Shimon Askan that also malon l'kohen al pei adeh, that you can declare a person a kohen based on one aid. So the question is, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Hainer Rav Elazar? Isn't Rav Shimon Gamliel saying the same thing as Rav Elazar? Chitema, you might argue that maybe the difference between them, Arachad, Ikebenayu, maybe the machlokus between them is, how many people do you need for it to be considered a valid iru? Rav Elazar sava iru chad, Rav Shimon Gamliel sava iru tre. Maybe Rav Elazar or Rav Elazar holds in the Mishnah, when Rav Elazar had said in the Mishnah, Emesai b'machim sheyesh urin. But he didn't say how many consists of the Urim. Maybe Rav Elazar holds that even if you have one person coming to Beis Din and says, you know what, I know this guy is a cholol, his mother was a grusha, then that would be then we would say that you need two aidim to counteract that. But if you didn't have that, then one is enough. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel would be saying, no, in order to b'chlal need anything in order to have a problem, you need two aidim claiming that he's a cholol. So maybe that would be the machlokas. Can't be. Rabbi Yochanan says that everybody agrees that an error consists of two. You have to have two aidim saying that he's a ben grusha or ben chalutza for it to be a problem. One is not enough. So and everybody agrees to that. He's saying that everybody agrees to that. No, what we're talking about the case is like this. It's a whole complicated scenario. We know we have a chazaka that this guy's father is a kohen. Then rumors started spreading that this son is Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza, that the mother was possible of Kohona. So what we did, Beis Din suspended him from Kohona. They didn't say outright, you're not a Kohen anymore, but they said, we have to suspend you. You can't duchen or eat truma or whatever until we clarify the matter. Then one aide comes and says, this guy is a Kohen. So therefore, we raised him back up. We reinstated him as a kohen because so far all there was a coil. There wasn't any specific aid. There was just a rumor going around that his mother was a grusha. One aid is enough to counteract that. Now, what happened? But also Beitshtei, then two aidim came. Va'amri ben grusha ben chalutzahu. They said that he is a ben grusha ben chalutzah. Va'achasine, and therefore we removed him from being a kohen. Again. So before it was suspended. Now there's actually two aidim. But also, aid echad va'amu yadayna ve'dekoyenu. And now one more aid comes and says, no, I know that he's a kohen. Now, u'dekulei alma mitzarfin la'edus. Now, let's assume at this point that everybody agrees that the original aid who said that he's a kohen and the later aid who said that he's a kohen can combine together, which gives us now it's today to today. You have two against two. So therefore, everything should be good. But v'hacha, but what would be the machlokas? B'meichush l'zulusa debay dina kamiflegi. The machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon is, are we concerned about Zulusa de Beidina? Are we concerned about that people are going to think lightly of the Beis Din? If they go and declare him a Kohen again, the people are going to think that Beis Din doesn't know what they're doing. One day they're declaring him not a Kohen, the next day Vaiser a Kohen, going back and forth like that. Tanakama Sovar, so the Tanakama, meaning Rabbi Elazar figures, Kivendach Sinai Lai Maskinai Lai. Once we demoted him from being a Kohen, and we're not talking about the original demotion, that was just based on a coil. But once we had two Aidim, that we demoted him from being a Kohen, we're not going to reinstate him as a kohen, even though we have two aidim, because we're concerned people are going to make fun of Beis Din. People are going to think that Beis Din doesn't know what they're doing. It's unfortunate, but you know, we have to make sure to uphold the honor of the Beis Din. Rav Shimon Gamliel Savar, Anan Achsinin Leiv, Anan Maskinin Leiv, Rav Shimon Gamliel Hold, no, we demoted him from being a Kohen, fine, we can also raise him back to being a Kohen. We're not worried about Zulusa de Beidina. Bepashtus, because since people see that there are two, that there are two Edim in the end, you have two against two, people are going to realize, not Zumos debate, you know, they didn't have all the evidence in front of them, and now they do. Now, Rashi points out over here, so the question is really, even so, we have two against two. What does that help us, really? That still leaves us a suffix, doesn't it? And so Rashi says that actually what it is we give him his original chazaka. Originally, we had a chazaka that he's a kohen. We only demoted him temporarily because of the coil. So fine, once the coil is not significant when there are Edom around, once we have two and two, then we can ignore the coil and go back to we knew his father was a kohen, therefore we can assume he's a kohen on that basis.
Because the coil has two Edom.
Yeah, but the coil we ignore, in other words, because we have two against two. We have two Edom saying that he's not a kohen, and two that say that he is, and therefore, therefore that's good enough. Tosfos has a very, very long discussion of it over here about
the chazaka for the kohen, but we don't count the chazaka that there is a coil.
No, because the coil itself doesn't create a chazaka. Anyway, Tosfos argues on this whole thing. They say, what do we mean, in what sense would he have a chazaka? Not the chazaka that beforehand we thought that he was a kohen. Because, yeah, maybe the kohen canceled that. But the fact that his father has a chazaka of being a kohen, that, given that we have two against two Edim, then fine, we can transfer that chazaka to the son.
You know, the father's, could be that he was like a married
couple. It could be, but since we have two against two, then already, you know, yeah. Yeah, so that's one answer. Mask for Rabashi, so Rabashi asks Anani Hochia for the Tureya Treinami. If so, if that's the case, if Sachako, the case you're talking about is you have two Edim against two Edim, then why do you have to have this complicated scenario over here where you have first a coil, then one aid, then two Edim, then one aid? Just say very simple, you have two Edim against two Edim. It should be that according to Rabbi Elazar, once we demoted him as a Kohen because of the first two Edim, then you can't promote him back to being a Kohen, even if you have two Edim right then and there. Why bother going back and forth with the yes, no? Ella, Amar Rabashi, we mitzvah in la'edus k'misagi. So no, Rabashi says, the machloikas in our Mishnah is basically on the issue, can these two edim combine into one edus, the original aid and the later one, do we consider that one edus?
Separated by time.
Yes, or with plot to the Hanitanoi. And in fact, therefore, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel are having the same machloikas in our Mishnah as other Tanoim. The Tanya, we learn in a braise, Ein edusin mitzdaref es ad shiyiru shneim ke'achad. Two edim don't combine together unless they both see the same thing. Now, we're talking about over here in Dinim Mominus. We're not even talking about Dinim Nefashis, there's a whole other issue. But in Dinim Mominus, you have to have, you can't have, the Tanakama is saying over here, let's say, for example, you had one aid was there when Reuben borrowed money from Shimon. Later, there was only one aid there. Later on, in the presence of another aid, Reuben says, you know, I owe Shimon that money. The Tanakhama is saying that's not good enough. The one saw the loan, the one saw the admission, that's not good enough to combine. Rabbi Yeshua ben Kocha, Omar, or Rabbi Yeshua ben Kocha said, no, after the bazaar, even if it was one after the other. That even if one saw the loan, one saw the admission, that's good enough. Another machloikus, the ein edus in eskayemus v'beisin at shi'ur shneim ke'achad, the edus is not accepted by based in as a complete edus, even if they both saw the loan, unless they come together and say edus together in based in. Rab Nassan says no. Shemin dvarav shalzeh hayom, you can listen to one aid today. And then when the second aid comes later on, you can listen to what he says. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar in our Mishnah would be holding like the Tanakhama, that they both the two edim have to be coming together. Like this, one of them came, and then in between the two negative edim came, and then the other one shows up too late. Because Reb Nosson says, and Reb Shimon Gamliel holds like Reb Nosson, that it's good enough to have one aid now and one aid later, and we can combine them. The halacha in the case of regular edus is like Rabbi Shurban Kocha and Rabbi Nassan, that you can have, they can see different things. One can see the loan, one can see the admission, and also that they can come at different times based in. As far as our Mishnah, it's kind of a moot point. The halacha is that ein malam korun al piyedecha, to consider somebody a kohen miyuchas, you need two edim anyway. So, yeah.
Their edus can be considered separately in time, but they never have to reappear together.
No, according to Reb Nassan, no. That's what Reb Nassan is saying. That no. In other words, it comes out if you combine together Reb Shurban Kocha and Reb Nassan, you can have that you can have the two Edim, Levi and Yehuda. Levi saw the loan, and he comes to Beis Din this week. Yehuda saw the admission, and he comes to Beis Din next week, and it'll be fine.
That's the way the halacha is today.
Yes. So the Mishnah says, a couple of Mishnayos ago, we learned about the concept of Shvuya. We learned that a woman who was captured by Goyim is a woman who was captured by Goyim, unless there's Eidos that she's Tahor, then we assume there may have been a problem, and if her husband is a Kohen, she's also. Now we have a similar case. A woman who was arrested, who was put in jail by Goyim, if it was a monetary matter, then she's still mutter to her husband. Meaning, what would it be a matter of money? She or her husband owes the Goyim money. Now, they would be afraid to touch her. They'd be afraid to rape her or whatever, because then they'll lose their money. Then the husband will sue them in court and say, you know what, why should I pay you back when you rape my wife? So therefore, she'd be mutter to her husband. And Tosfos points out that actually it means even if her husband is a Goyim, we would allow her to be mutter to her husband. I didn't fush us after the baila. Whereas if it was a matter of life and death, where she was sentenced to death, then she's also to her husband. Now here is a big machlokas rishonim. What kind of husband are we talking about in this last case of the Mishnah? When we say after the baila, Rashi says that it means even if her husband is a yisrael, she's also to him. Now why would that be? A koyin we can understand because there's a possibility that she was raped. And we said by Kohen, even onus is also. Why by Yisrael? So Rashi brings an interesting idea. Because they're noyig in bar hefker, because they're treating her casually anyway, she's sentenced to death, they don't have any regard for her life, we're afraid, Shemen Israt Sab'echa, man, what if she was willing to be with one of them, maybe in hopes that then they'll have Rachmanis on her or something. And that would make her also, because it was Berasa. The Tosfos discusses that a little bit over here. The Rambam holds differently. The Rambam doesn't hold of that concept. The Rambam holds when we say Asur Labayla, we mean if her husband's a Kohen. So basically, she's considered like a Shavuya then. She'd be permitted to her husband if he's Yisrael, but also if he's a Kohen. A couple of interesting things about this. There was a historical case. It's brought in Shurim Sadesha, and the Rambam quotes it in Shulchan Aruch. There was a case where there were a bunch of Jewish women who were arrested and sentenced to death by the Goyish authorities in Austria 600 or so years ago, and afterwards, eventually, when they were released, there was the real question: are they going to be mutter to their husbands? So actually, I think there was another issue over there that some of them were actually forced to convert during that time, which creates a whole other set of issues. What if then once they converted, they're more willing to be with these goyim, whatever. Anyway, the Shurim Sadeshin wound up having to actually use the method we talked about this in Yevamos, that after Inur Rabbanon LeKedushin, that in certain rare cases, actually we had at the beginning of Amos after also, that in certain rare cases the Chachamim can retroactively cancel the Kedushin. In this case, he felt that he had to do that because that's the only way he could declare them mutter to return to their husbands. Otherwise, we have this concern over here. Whereas if we say they were never married to their husbands, then fine. So they did that. Now their husbands would have to be mekadosh them all over again, but at least they'd be mutter to them. For the kohenim, that's a different thing. The kohenim, if I remember correctly, with the Kohenim, part of what he had to do was to figure, based on the whole previous Gemara that we had over here, there's no Kohen Yichus nowadays, everybody is Kohen Chazaka, so therefore there's maybe a little wiggle room over there also. There's also, by the way, an interesting thing that what's tack of the difference? I mean, if we're saying over here, if she's in danger of death, then why, if she's willing to be with one of these goyim, why would we consider that beratzin to the extent that it would ask her to her husband? And the answer is they make a distinction between whether the onus is directly on gilui arayis. We learned in the first perek then that a woman is not chayev to be moser nefesh for that, and she would be moser to her husband because it was onus. Here it's kind of a side thing. She's in jail and is threatened with death. As a side thing from that, therefore, there's this that they're also trying to be honest to her, and therefore there's more of a possibility that she's going to go along with it in order to try to save herself. So that's the difference. The difference between whether it's directly onus on relations or whether it's indirect. Based on that, actually, the Rebbe pointed out once in a sicha for Purim, appropriate to the time of year, the difference between the Mesiras Nefesh of Chanukah and a Purim. We know when it, we all know the story of the Mesiras Nefesh of Chanukah. There, the Gzeiras were directly on Yiddishkeit. What would have happened if a person felt that he couldn't take the pressure and cracked and was over on one of the things that the Greeks were trying to get them to be over on? You'd consider it was an onus. You know, what could they do? An onus rachmana pasre. They'd be passed from any punishment. What happened in the case of Purim? It was Hashmid Lad Ugla Abid. Haman wants to wipe out the whole Jewish people, Rahman al-Islam. Now, we know the famous idea that the Yidden was standing in the Siddur's Nefesh there the whole year because if any of them had been willing to Shmadzich, he would have gotten away with it. But the difference is, therefore, it comes out, therefore, the Mesiras Nefesh of Purim was of a different kind. It was the kind where you couldn't even consider it an onus. You couldn't even consider it an onus on Yiddishkeit, because it wasn't an onus directly on Yiddishkeit. As an indirect thing, the gzeira is l'hashmid l'harug l'abed. As an indirect thing, you could get out of it by shmadding. Similar to our mission over here, where this woman is sentenced with death, and indirectly she might get out of it by being the sirasa to these goyim, and therefore we don't consider that onus. So therefore, the point is, the Mesiras Nefesh of Purim, the Rebbe says in the Sicha, was on a higher level even than the Mesiras Nefesh of Hanukkah. It was the kind of Mesiras Nefesh where there wasn't even the possibility where they could get away with a taina of onus. Anyway, Gemara says, Amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak Amar Rav, Lo Shonu El Shiyad Yisrael Tkifa Al Ovdei Kochavim. This is what the Mishnah is saying, that if the woman was arrested because of matters of money, that she'll remain mutter to her husband, that is only at a time when the Jews have power over the Goyim. Not total power, maybe, but in other words, enough power that if the goyim are afraid, that if they abuse her, then they're going to lose their money. But if at the time when the goyim have power over the Jews, now the expression the Gemara is using over here is a euphemism. The Gemara doesn't want to use the expression that the goyim have power over the Jews. So instead of saying that yad over the chacham is takifa al Yisrael, he uses the expression al atzmon, on themselves. But we know what it means. So if the goyim have power over Jews, then even if it's a matter of money, she'd be also to her husband, because then they're not afraid to abuse her. Incidentally, by the way, I saw a very interesting tshuva from Yoel, the old Satmar Rebbe, on the question: What about Jewish women who were in the concentration camps? Are we going to call them? Are we going to say they're shvuyas or nechvasha, dinafashas or whatever, and they're also to their husbands? And he says one thing is that no, in the case we're talking about over here in the Mishnah, the goyim are still treating her as a human being. They may not respect her very much as a human being, and therefore there can be the problem. But and therefore there's the problem that they might abuse her in these ways, but they might violate her. But in those cases, at that time they were considering the Jews to not even be human. And there were pretty stiff penalties in the Nazi laws against having anything to do with Jews like that. So therefore therefore he says there's no possibility of it, and therefore there's nothing to be concerned about as far as the dinim. Mostly
the concentration camps themselves.
Yeah. Or in the ghettos, whatever, yeah, same during that whole period, yeah. Masiv Rava. So Rava says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Heid Rav Yossi HaKoyin v'Rav Zchai ben Akatsav. Rav Yossi HaKoyin and Rav Zchai ben Akatsav gave Eidus. And whenever they gave Eidus, whenever we say anything in the Sefer Eidus that they gave Eidus on, the Halacha is like it. Al Bas Yisrael, Shakur Hana Vashkaloin, about a Bas Yisrael, a Jewish girl, who was Hurhana, she was used as a Mashkoin, she was used like as collateral for a loan in Ashkelon. Her family had borrowed money from Goyim. They didn't have the money to pay, so they gave their daughter into their to stay by them or whatever as like a hostage.
Like we saw for the previous case of Mammon.
Yeah, well, no, the case of Mammon before was, for example, that they owe a lot of money to the Goyim, and therefore they throw him in jail. Here it's a little bit different. Here it's not. The Gemara is going to point out in a minute. There's a little bit of a difference. Here it's she was given to them like as collateral for the loan. Later on, when she returned home, her family was staying away from her. They figured there's a possibility that she's a shavuya. She was in jail. There's a possibility that the goyim violated her, and therefore she's also.
Why did they put her up in collateral in the first place?
Good question. Yeah. However, there were edim with her who testified that the whole time she had been there, she had never been secluded with any of the goyim, and she had never been become tummy. So the Chachamim said to the family, "Listen, if you believe that she was taken as collateral, then you also have to believe the Eidim Shalai Nistu over Shalai Nitma, that she wasn't secluded and she wasn't tummy. Then don't believe that she was taken as collateral either. It's kind of a pesh also a pesh etu situation. Now, the question is, now, Ashkelon was a place where Goyim had power over the Jews. Rashi points out for two reasons. First of all, Ashkelon was originally a Plishti city, so even in those days, there was still Plishtim living over there. They had never really been under Jewish control. And this is already after the Rabbi Yossi HaKohen and Rabbi Chai ben Akasa. We'll see Rabbi Chai ben Akasa in a Mishnah tomorrow also, but they lived at the time of the Churban and right after it, so already the Jews are going into Golos. So for sure, the Goyim and Ashkelon have power over the Jews.
What do you mean Al-Tamidu Shehorim? They give it to them.
Right, but it means, in other words, we have Edim that say that the whole time. In other words, you're arguing that Hurana.
Don't believe the Edim. Don't believe that.
In other words, when the family is not saying the problem is that Hurana. The family is saying the problem is that she was Nech B'Shobi Yarev Kuchavim, that she's in Goyish's hands. So if you're not going to believe the Edim, Shlo Nistera, then effectively there's no reason to believe that Hurana is a problem either. Yeah, you gave her over to them as Hurana, but you're claiming that there's a problem with it, but there's no reason to believe that there's a problem with this Edim Anyway, but Ashkelon diado becomes the kifal atzman. Now, in this case, the Goyim had power over the Jews. And yet, the Braisa is talking about, the Mishnah rather, is talking about a case where Hurana, where she was given over to them as collateral, midas. Where what happened then, Rashi adds the detail with this Hurana. What happened was, she was given to them as collateral. It was supposed to be, she's going to stay by them for a certain amount of time until the loan is paid off. The loan wasn't paid off in time, they defaulted on the loan, so therefore she remained with them. And under Goyish law, she would be considered their property now. Which Nech B'Shaloi, the implication is, but if she was only in jail, where she's not permanently considered there, even in Goyish law, a prisoner is not considered the property of the jailers. So what are you making a distinction between Al Yedei Mammon and Al Yedei Nefasha? We see from this Mishnah that even Al Yedei Mammon, even though it was a matter of money, you need Edim. If there hadn't been Edim, we would say that only in the case of Hurana do you need Edim. In the case of Nech B'Shor, which was just arrested, you don't need Edim. Because that's the implication, that only Hurana is a more serious case than Nech B'Shor. Nech B'Shor just means she was arrested, she's in jail. But presumably, even if it was Ayyadei Nefashis, even if they had arrested her Ayyadei Nefashis, we would say there's no problem. And yet, we see from this Mishnah in Adius that only in the case of Hurana, which is a case where, according to their laws, let's backtrack a little bit. One second. We said like this. The Mishnah is saying that Ayyadei Mammon, she's mutter because they're afraid they're going to lose their money. But we said if the Goyim have power over the Jews, then even Ayyadei Mammon, there's a problem because they're not afraid to lose their money. But what do we see from this Mishnah in Adius? That only in the case of Hurana, where it's according to Goyish law at this point, she belongs to them because they defaulted on the loan, then only then do you need Edim. But if it's anything less than that, if it's just Nech B'Shor, if she was just arrested because of money, but they haven't yet decided the case, let's say she still has a chance to pay, then she wouldn't be also even without Edim. But what are you making a distinction like that? Because in this case, there were Edim, there were witnesses that she had never been secluded with the Goyim. The answer is, not necessarily. You could say that the Mishnah there in Adius means that the same thing would be true if she had just been arrested. It so happened in this case it was Hurana, and therefore that's the case that they talk about. But yes, maybe the same din would apply to Nech B'Shor also. So you don't have a proof from that Mishnah against this distinction that Rav had made between whether the Goyim have power over the Jews or vice versa.
Who says lo the Gemara?
The Gemara is saying lo, yeah. Yeah.
Lasky, there's a statement from Meister Surya about